All right, hello and welcome to Human Progress and How to Win. All right, this is episode 20, so we've reached 20 episodes already, and it's cool. It's moving right along, and I just crossed the 100 plays, the 100 total plays, so that's pretty cool. I'm at like 105 now. Several countries right now, and I mean, U.S. is the most, but yeah, so it's really cool. It's really cool to see Anchor, this platform. It's just been so handy. I mean, it's just so cool to get this started and get it going. It's not that hard, you guys. If you think about anything that you want to talk about, if you have a good idea for a podcast, go do it. You know, start it on Anchor. And you don't even, obviously you'll hear the ad at the beginning of the episode, but no, it's really true. There's minimal effort in doing these. I just hit record and just start going. But anyways, all right, let's get into it. Episode 20. So this is titled "The Founder Scarcity Problem: Saudi Aramco, Helion Energy, and Lower Carbon Capital." Okay, so this one actually is going to be a lot of kind of going through my Twitter, and I like a lot of things, just, you know, hitting the like button. and I thought maybe it would be good to kind of do that more often, because a lot of times I don't find a podcast episode or YouTube that is that good to talk about. I don't know. Yeah, this week was kind of dry. That's why, you know, I'm a little bit over a week. Well, if I would have done it yesterday, it would have been a full week. But yeah, this is kind of 8 days, I think, that I released an episode. I don't know. I didn't find a lot that inspired me that I wanted to talk about. So, but what I do often is I'm on Twitter multiple times a day in quite a while. And I just read through a lot. And I like a lot of things, you know, a lot, just kind of one line, you know, how Twitter is, you know, just short statements, but they're really good. They're inspirational. They make you think. And that's the kind of thing with my Twitter usage. I don't tweet a whole lot, and I'm kind of figuring out how to kind of do that. I don't know more. I do want to make sure my tweets are thoughtful. They're thought provoking. But they're not too controversial, and I just kind of, you know, because once you start doing it, you're gonna start to get a type of kind of like persona or type of something that says about you. And I want to make sure I have I'm kind of modeled after something that I'm proud of. So I don't know. I tend to just use Twitter to read through and absorb as much as I can from very, very smart people. And I think that's okay for now. Cause a lot of times people say Twitter should be, you know, your followers to following ratio, you know, you want to get to a point where you're like a ton of people are following you and you're only following a select few. Well, I guess that's true, but you know, that would be nice if you were already famous. Like, I feel like that already works. That will work best for people that are already, like, you know, have made it. But, you know, people like me, I'm in my young, twenties now yet, and I don't have a strong background. I'm trying to make it in tech. I find that it's almost like reading as many books as you can. If I follow a ton of, you know, amazing smart people and startups, I want to learn from, you know, all I can. That's why, you know, I scroll through Twitter quite a lot, and I kind of just stop when I'm tired of it or whatever. But I think it's a good thing to do, though, when you're kind of young, you're starting out, you don't really have a name for yourself. Again, I think it's just like short little books, almost. Like every tweet is like a short, very, very short book, just like the main takeaway from a book. And I don't know, that's my thinking. It's like, I might as well just add up as many as I can. So I have like, I don't know, like 2,000, 3,000 something follow, like that I'm following. And then I only have like 500 some people following me. And a lot of it is not even like, there's a lot of bots and there's a lot of people that I think pay for followers. So it wasn't even genuine in the first place. So, you know, that's just how Twitter works. But I use it to read. I use it to get inspiration. So I thought that I would kind of just run through a lot of tweets, recent tweets that I've liked, and see what you guys think. So sorry for the rambling. Let's get to, okay. This first one is actually a podcast episode, The Founder Scarcity Problem, from, again, the Village Global Venture Stories podcast, Eric Tornberg. The episode is titled How to Fix Founder Scarcity with Burak Yeniguin. I'll try to include his Twitter. I don't think I've followed him yet, so I need to do that. All right, so, and Eric, I know from kind of listening to him for a while now, I know him and like the Be On Deck organization that they're part of. They're really big on this. Like, how do we get more founders in the game? And it was a good conversation. I'm not going to talk about it too long because I think one of the main interesting takeaways was actually there are a lot more founders nowadays compared to like 10 years ago, or at least people trying to be founders. I think so. The thing that they were saying though is that there's way much more capital and investors nowadays. So, and the problem with that is, that they're being very selective on who they fund. So, it's funny because like I feel like, yeah, they're saying there are a lot of founders starting companies, but you don't hear about it. There's like a ton of more failures happening. Like there's just not a lot of big wins that are happening right now. We're in a very, I don't know, I think it is kind of doldrum-ish type of phase right now. And and that's why you do see like a lot of capital and investors are throwing money at a ton of different things, but things aren't catching on. So we're not hearing of like major breakthroughs happening a lot. And we're wondering how to fix that. You know, how do we get better at this? And I'm very interested in this. And that's so what Be On Deck and what they've been tweeting about recently is, well, I think we need a bigger community around startups and around founders. Like, it's not enough to just have, you know, the founder, the VC, the couple engineers, and those select few people are going to try to make it happen. You know, no, it's harder to get successful these days. It's the competition has never been fiercer. Or more fierce, I don't know. And it's going to take a lot more help to get, you know, to scale. And that's what we're not seeing. We're not seeing enough people rallying around good ideas. I don't know. I think a lot of it has to do with there's just too many people trying to do their own thing. It's, you know, like I said, it's never been easier to start a company, you know, especially with this no code movement I talked about last episode with tools like Webflow. You know, you could have a startup up and running in a weekend. You could do that in a weekend. And a lot of people are doing that. And I feel like there's just a lot of people are just talking about their own projects and there's not enough people like rallying around one or two good ideas, like really, really good ideas. So, you know, maybe that's what we need to work on is like, you know, come on, like not everybody needs to be a founder. Let other people win. Let the best people who you think like, let them and help them with their projects instead of, you know, maybe back off on your side project for a change and like go help someone that's like actually like really doing something amazing. And so I don't know. Yeah, like I said, there's just a lot more people in the game right now, and it's almost like there's just too much out there, and not enough great talent is happening. So interesting to note. We'll see how this plays out. I'm gonna keep an eye on Be On Deck and their new kind of movement. This cosign is a really interesting idea that they're starting to kind of branched off from the On Deck, and this is like a kind of a network verification platform. It's like Eric always uses the example of if someone graduated from Harvard, you know, even top of the class, that would be kind of less valuable than someone saying personally, like, oh, no, I've worked with this guy and he's amazing. Like, this person is just, no, you want to hire this person. And he's saying that that referral right there is more powerful than just a random person you don't know with a Harvard degree. So that's really interesting. That's what Cosign is about. Check that out. I will link that in the Twitter or from the Twitter link or whatever in the description. So that's kind of the way that they're wanting to find great talent is this Cosign, this network driven way of finding great talent. Well, that's kind of another thing that they talked about was like, I mean, everybody is kind of wanting to be this great founder, you know, of a billion-dollar company. It is attractive. It's alluring. But the thing with it now is like, well, we're kind of getting more like average people. It's hard to say, like, you know, good people, like they have good intentions and everything, but they're not like super talented. I mean, imagine if, you know, you relate it to sports. Or, we'll just take sports, for example. Like, okay, I mean, imagine the NBA or, you know, and then, like, I don't know, just, like, pick up basketball people like me. I play a lot. And what if I got to go to, like, an NBA tryouts or something? And I actually got to play for a little bit. Like, you know, who doesn't want to do that? Or who doesn't want to be, you know, the next best rap or pop singer? You know, that's why American Idol. And that's why American Idol was so fun to watch, because you'd see the funniest ones were like the people that were actually thought they were so amazing. And like everyone else was like, oh my God, you're terrible though. Like, do you hear yourself? So those awkward moments were like, that's why American Idol was so captivating. It was entertaining because you'd have these people who so believed in themselves, and it was so beautiful. I mean, it's fun to watch people that are so gung-ho about it and they really think they're good and they're onto something, but like everyone else is like, wow, you are, I mean, come on, do you hear yourself? It's kind of that way in tech now. You just have everyone trying to get in it. Everyone's wanting to make, you know, a lot of money with it and change the world. And that's being so polluted right now. It's so hard to find through the weeds, the great talent. Okay. Enough on that. Let's move to the bulk of it now is going to be a lot of, let's see. Before I do, let's go through my tweets and just kind of maybe like a rapid fire kind of thing. I'll try to, you know, that's kind of a neat thing. A rapid fire round of tweet storms or, you know, okay. So Daniel Gross, I don't want to go too much into people's backgrounds cause that's going to, him, check him out. Cause he's the founder of the Pioneer app, the competition thing. Check that out. A Pioneer to-do app. But he tweeted out January 24th, he asked the question, is the internet the most underpriced product in human history? It's like kind of, you know, it's very interesting to note. And I think what he means by that, I'm not going to go into the replies or anything. For most of us here in the States, at least, like the internet's pretty free. The internet, you know, Twitter, you don't have to pay monthly for it. And I get access to all this knowledge, podcasts. I get access to all this great content, knowledge. It's free. Google, they don't charge you. It's free. And it's like, yeah, is it the most underpriced product, the internet itself? And this is why I talked about CERN the other time, because are we, you know, do you think in the 2020s here, are we going to see a new birthing of something as big as the internet? Like, I don't know. I mean, because I love the big technological shifts, as you guys know. And so I try to think broader, you know, not just all these apps all the time, you know. TechCrunch is cool. Like, I do like to pay attention to, like, TechCrunch and Crunchbase. But, you know, that's I'm not caught up always in just all the apps and startups that are happening. I like to pay attention to what's bigger than that, you know? I don't know. Okay, moving on. I liked this one a lot because, you know, sometimes I'm not anti-VC, but I question a lot of what happens in VC culture, VC land. And this guy, Jason Lemkin, tweeted, okay, quote, he goes, okay, great, but why are you raising a fund? And then all these kind of like starred reasons. It goes, do you know how to do 5X plus? Question mark. Are you committed for 12 to 20 years? Are you okay with no distributions for a decade? Why will founders pick you, really? And why will you win? And then he goes, the wrong answer is, I am tired of being a founder. See, and that's, I like that a lot because I really think that that's what happens. You have a founder that won really big one time and then they go start a fund. I don't know. I don't see anything wrong with that. However, you keep this tweet in mind because this is what, you know, it's not as easy as I think a lot of people think. And what I don't like to see is like, These founders that have that won really big, it seems to me that they just stop working though. So I know it's not as drastic as the founder retires at 35 and they do nothing but vacation and sit on the beach and drink Mai Tais. Like, no, we know that stereotype is not true. However, starting a fund, and I feel like investing, I just don't know how hard they work. And I think they just kind of want to bank off of other people who are working insanely hard. And they're just trying to keep their wealth going by kind of mooching off of other people working hard. And the thing, what I don't like about that, like, it's just like, you won really big once, but like continue to work really, really hard though. You know, go volunteer, go work for an energy solution startup. Go fight climate change. Go put on your boots, put on your gloves, and go do some dirty work, you know? Don't just sit in this fancy office and you know, and yeah, I don't know. It's just, that's kind of what I have an issue with some of these investors. Anyways, moving on. Okay. A tweet from Johnny I like. Well, first I'm going to go to Biology. Him and Torenberg go kind of, they tweet all the time. They're really good friends. I think Biology is, he's best known for crypto right now, but he's involved with the Village Global Network Fund. And he tweeted, everyone will become a VC. And I think this had to do with a thread, but I just like that part because this is kind of what I think the world needs to go to. We need to find like a way where everyone can like invest in startups. And I'm not talking about, you know, after the IPO, I'm talking about getting in on deals very early, like a seed round, pre-seed round, whatever. And like, let me put $100 in. And I want to see that $100 grow 10,000x, or at least 10x, 100x, 1,000x. You know, we all want to get rich. Everybody wants to get rich. And it should be open to the public. And I think that's where it needs to go. That's kind of what I'm fighting for a lot of ways. You know, it shouldn't just be for these elite. There are people that are already rich. I'm trying to get rich. I don't know. Open it up to the public is what I'm saying. Okay, we're already at like almost 20 minutes, so I want to get to the main parts of this. James Clear, I always like his tweets a lot. He tweeted, focus collapses your options in the short term, but expands them in the long term. So kind of, you know, so basically, you know, you have to focus on kind of narrowing your options down in the short term. But when you do that, if you're good at it, you pick one or two things that are going to win really big and compound in the long term. That's kind of what this is talking about. Yes, I like it. Okay, yeah, so, all right, lower, so they changed their name to Lower Carbon Capital. Obviously, it used to be Lowercase Capital. This is a fund from Chris Sacca. You guys probably have known him from the Tim Ferriss Show, and he was on Shark Tank, actually, and they posted up, so they're now big on, like, climate change, fighting climate change. So they tweeted out, so for too long, the world has ignored the scientists, inventors, and entrepreneurs who are pursuing solutions to lower emissions, remove carbon, and actively cool the planet. We're working to fix that. Come join us. So they tweeted out a jobs link. And yeah, I need to apply this to my apply to this myself. I might do it tomorrow or something. So yeah, there's some jobs opening, and I don't know, it'd be really cool. I mean, I'm not, you know, I just try it. I don't know. I don't have obviously a business investing background, but I obviously pay a lot of attention to tech and VC culture. And so, yeah, maybe I have a shot. I don't know. I just think it's cool. And I really think it's cool now, especially that they're called, you know, lower carbon capital. I really like that. And I don't know much about Chris Sock kind of, but he always seems like a cool guy. I know that a quick story, he started out at Google, and he as almost an intern, it was an intern or like an entry level, like first couple weeks on the job, he would go into like the biggest meetings where like Larry and Sergey were at, and like all the head people at Google, and he would just sit there and take notes, and they would look at him and been like, who are you, what are you doing in here? And he was just like, well, I'm just taking notes if you don't mind. And you know what, that kind of hustle and ambition, like that, and that grit, I don't know, that's just a really cool story. And you know, look at him now, he obviously is wealthy enough to start this fund, do pretty well for himself. He's on Shark Tank, you know, he's doing it. All right, we got to get to let's see. Yeah, we're on 22 minutes. I like, because I will talk about this because I actually tweeted too on this. Ryan Orbuck, okay, so he was a product at Stripe, and he's really about all about fighting climate change too. And Stripe is like, as a company, very, very trying to go like carbon neutral, and they're like donate, like, I don't know, investing like half their profits to you know, climate change research and stuff. I mean, you know, it's Patrick Collison. I mean, he's one of my biggest idols right now. He tweeted out, scientists should have agents. I like this a lot. You know, it's like, yeah, no, I mean, that's a, you know, it's like, why not? I just, it's, to me, I just think scientists are like these people that are just out, or they're just like locked in these labs, and no one really hears from them until they have a breakthrough. And then the funding that they get is usually always from the school, like the university, or government funded, which, you know, it's good, but it's like, I think we could do better. And this, I tweeted at him, I only got one like so far, but I said, scientists should have VC money. And so seriously, like, and that it's kind of along the same lines anyways, because what he means by agents is scientists should have VCs backing them. It's like, we just don't, there's not enough VCs that are paying attention to like scientists and like working with them and funding them. It's like I said, it's just like they're tenured professors that are just working away, and it's all good. We want them to do that, but it's like, why aren't we communicating with them more? You know, like, let's, especially like cancer research, you know, we should be spending so much more money funding to fight cancer. And it needs to come from the private sectors. VCs just need to be all on this. And yeah, anyways, it was a cool tweet. And I, you know, this is kind of replying to famous, or I don't know, famous, but just like replying to important people, smart people, is a way to get started. You know, you don't always have to tweet random thoughts that come out. Try to make it purposeful, you know. So I think replying, you know, as if you want to start, helps a lot too. All right. So anyways, I'm 25 minutes. Okay. We got to talk about the big one. So Saudi Aramco. So they just apparently, Saudi Aramco is now the most valuable company in the world. They just IPO'd, and it seemed like it came out of nowhere. But yeah, they are now, and it's like the 2 trillion mark. They hit the 2 trillion mark. So it's in the news. You guys might have heard of it. And here's my thing, guys. I think it was founded in like 1933. So, you know, these things obviously take time. But why I'm going to talk about this right now, because I thought, okay, Saudi Arabia, this oil company, Saudi Arabia, all their money came from this oil, the oil business from us. And it's basically this company, this one company, Saudi Aramco, is like the main ones behind it. So, you know, it got me thinking. I mean, so pay attention to them in the future, because, you know, now that they're this big, they're not going to want to lose their king, you know, their crown. They're at the top company in the world. So they're going to now invest in growing green alternative energy solutions. You know, I know it's oil now, obviously, but, you know, it gets you thinking about what's coming in the, you know, 2020s to 2030, and even in turning into the 2030s to 2040. What's going to be important? What do people care about the most? Like climate change? Like seriously, a lot of people like that aren't. And that's the thing. You got to think about the world's biggest problems. Okay, climate change is one of those. You know, it's like if you're in tech, if you're wanting to do something big and great and impactful, you know, let's take a step out of the computer, out of the phone. No more apps. You know, you don't always have to think about apps, the next big app. You don't have to think about the next big, you know, social network platform, whatever. I mean, literally, I mean, so it got me thinking, and I'm thinking about, okay, who are the biggest power players in like alternative energy solutions today? I know I sometimes think about it, but like, I just did a quick Google search, like what are the main startups happening that are, you know, kind of fighting climate change? So I came across this article from Spectrum IEEE. I know I've heard of them before. Anyways, 5 big ideas for making fusion power a reality. So I read, this is really cool. And this just came out actually. Like I did a quick Google search, and sure enough, this came out on like January 28th or 26th or something. So Helion Energy is one of the companies featured in this article. And it just so happens that, yeah, this is like a very innovative, different nuclear energy company. And I'm not going to read all about it right now because we're kind of coming up on time. But, you know, one of the biggest things that got me interested in this is who's backing them, who's investing. And sure enough, it's Y Combinator. So I think back in 2014. So Y Combinator and Mithril Capital. Mithril is a Peter Thiel fund. It's based in Austin, Texas. Didn't know he had it. He has like 2 or 3 funds. It's crazy. But yeah, so you know to pay attention to this if both Y Combinator and Peter Thiel are funding this. Sam Altman of Y Combinator talks about nuclear fusion a lot. And seriously, guys, think bigger than just apps. And I'm doing it. You know, if you guys want to build something great, build your equity. Think about these nuclear fusion companies, Helion Energy. I actually sent an application. All right, guys, the 29-minute mark, it's in red, so I got to wrap this up. But I will include everything in the description. Go look at these companies, contact them, apply if you can, because that's what we're all about. We got to make it, you know, and do whatever. Just keep that hustle going, guys. All right, we'll see you in the next episode, guys. All right, bye.